Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the largest and most important segment of society. To those who've come to realize that the world's political, religious, military, and economic institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, and that they cannot be fixed. In our opening hour today, we're going to have a discussion with one of my favorite people in the world, IQ Al-Rasuli. He is the world's foremost expert on the religion of Islam and the consequence of the world's tolerating this menacing religion. He is the author of Lifting the Veil, The True Faces of Muhammad and Islam. His books can be purchased at Amazon.com. IQ, welcome to Shattering Myths.
Thank you for having me.
IQ, I want to read segments of an editorial piece that I co-authored in the sense that another gentleman wrote it, and I have rewritten it to make it a bit more accurate. But I'd like your comments on it. It pertains to what we're witnessing now in Israel between Israel and Hamas. It begins, reporters will scribble down something about occupation and the cycle of violence. The diplomats will urge restraint and remind everyone that the only solution can be found through negotiations. But with all the empty words, a peaceful solution never materializes, because the maps that cede more territory to terrorists are addressing the wrong problem. It's not about territory. It's about religion. It's not about nationalism. It's about Islam. It's not about the occupation. It's about the Sunnah, the Quran, and Hadith. How would you respond to that?
I can't argue with you. There's nothing to argue. It's absolutely correct. Islam is Islam. You know, it's ironic. Erdogan, the Prime Minister of Egypt, of Turkey. Said mm-hmm. publicly, Islam is Islam. There is no such thing as a moderate Muslim. He said
correct.
It. The Muslims, right. Every single one of them say there is no such thing as a moderate Muslim.
And yet, by the way,
Obama speak about mm-hmm. peaceful Muslims and moderate Muslims.
What does the Quran and the Ninth Surah have to say about peaceful Muslims?
They are apostates to Islam, enemies of right. Islam, who have to be slaughtered.
Right. In fact, it even uses the term hypocrite. So if you pretend to be a Muslim and you and pretend to be and are peaceful, and you're pretending to be a peaceful Muslim. Like, for example, there were several people that worked in the Bush administration and Homeland Security that were Muslims that were actually monitored by the NSA, and they're having a conniption fit that just being a Muslim would cause them to be monitored. But the reality, according to the Quran, if you're peaceful and you claim to be a Muslim, you are a hypocrite.
In fact, you can't be a peaceful and Muslim. It's impossible. It's a contradiction.
Yes.
The minute somebody calls himself a peaceful Muslim, he is an apostate.
That's yes, correct. Yeah, in fact, the Ninth Surah goes far further than just saying that a Muslim who does not engage in jihad is a hypocrite. It says that Muslim becomes an apostate, and it goes further than that. It tells the jihadist Muslims to kill them, and it goes one step beyond that. Allah says, and Allah, by the way, is a manifestation of Muhammad's persona, Allah says that when the peaceful Muslim hypocrite arrives in hell, that he's personally going to attend to his torture.
Yep. In fact, the Surah 9, in chapter 20, verse 29, any Muslim who associates in friendship with a Jew or a Christian is automatically a traitor.
Yeah, of course. Now, someone listening to this program who is an expert on the Quran might quote the line, there should be no compulsion in religion. Now, that sounds like that is obfuscating what you just said. But what is the rule in Islam about contradictory statements?
The verses that were revealed to Muhammad, allegedly revealed to Muhammad in the later period of time, override, unsikhat, nasikh wa mansukh, means to abrogate all the earlier conciliatory verses.
So Muhammad,
chapter 9, verse 5, mm-hmm. the fighting verse, abrogated, according to Suyuti, 124 earlier conciliatory verses.
And there's only one surah that can abrogate something in Surah 9, because Surah 9 was the second to last surah allegedly revealed. Only the fifth comes after it, and the fifth surah is more vicious than the ninth.
Yeah. Well, something like from Medina.
Yeah, I think the only thing that the fifth surah does to augment the ninth is it adds crucifixion and amputation of arms and legs to the mix of Islamic responses to non-Muslims. And also, because Jews had been overhunted in Arabia at the time of the ninth surah and the fifth surah, the ninth surah was specifically written to justify Muhammad's final terrorist assault on Mecca, and the negation of Muhammad's promise that he would not terrorize the Meccans for 10 years. He wouldn't enslave them, he wouldn't kidnap them, he wouldn't rob them for 10 years. And so he needed the ninth surah to get his gods A-OK to renounce all of his commitments. It also says, begins with treaties between Muslims and non-Muslims are not binding on the Muslim. But the fifth surah, because now there was no one else to hunt in Arabia, expands the list of infidels to Christians. And so the purpose of the fifth surah, the final surah, is to expand Allah's enemies beyond Jews and beyond pagan Arabs to Christians.
That's very important to elaborate to the listeners what you just said. Ladies and gentlemen, there are 114 surahs in the Quran. And yet, the last surah is number 5, and the one before the last surah is number 9.
Mm-hmm.
There is no logic in the Quran, because it's nothing to do with holiness.
Correct. Yeah, it's in fact, the first alleged revelation is in the 96th surah. And what's interesting about it is that not only is the first alleged encounter between Muhammad and the dark spirit that he would later call Allah in the 96th surah of the 114 total, it's not even the total surah. It's just in there with other material, which means that there is absolutely no evidence whatsoever. In fact, all evidence is to the contrary, that these were revealed by a sane spirit to Muhammad for the benefit of humankind. It is the Quran chronologically is an absolute jumbled mess. And that's why, you know, in Prophet Adum, my whole purpose there was to rearrange the Quran chronologically and set it into the context of Muhammad's life using the hadith. Because, A, the Quran cannot, no text can be understood unless it's chronological and reviewed in context. But also critical is the Quran's law of abrogation, Quran 2:106, where it says, you know, if we change our mind and we bring a different verse, then you throw the old one into oblivion. Well, if the Quran's not reordered chronologically, how do you know which one came later?
It's very difficult without the hadith. In fact, the Quran does not exist without the hadith.
Correct. In fact, you and I have talked about this in the past. The Quran itself is hadith.
Yes, true. But the elaboration of the Quran,
yes,
how to pray, how to bend, how to yajid, and so on and so forth, are in the hadith. Otherwise, Muslims would not know how to do these things.
Yeah. In fact, I made the statement that without the hadith, Islam ceases to exist.
Correct.
And with the hadith,
there's nothing left.
Right, and with the hadith, Islam becomes the most vile, most violent, most enraged, most hateful, most counterproductive doctrine ever conceived by humankind.
Yada, we come to the same conclusion. I always said, hadith and Quran self-destruct.
Yes.
Literally, self-destruct.
Let me share a little more of this this article. It says the mother of one of the two Hamas operatives who kidnapped and then murdered the three Jewish boys earlier this month said, "I raised my children on the knees of the Islamic religion. They are religious boys, and their goal is to bring the victory of Islam." You notice she did not say that their goal was to bring about a Palestinian state. They didn't say that their goal was to bring about a two-state solution. This is not about 40% of this and 60% of that. She raised her boys for the victory of Islam and they sought to achieve that victory through kidnap and murder.
Well, there's nothing strange about it. That's exactly how Muhammad started. They are only clones. All 1,500 million followers of Muhammad are clones. They are not only psychopaths, they are sociopaths. I know it sounds like I'm generalizing, but I'm not generalizing.
That's true.
They are reading exactly the same scripture. Quran and Hadith are hate-mongering, war-mongering, misogynist, racist, duplicitous, vile, intolerant, and hence totally ungodly.
They were murdered in the name of a religious war that has been going on for 6 years shy of 1,400 years. Muslims didn't suddenly begin killing Jews in 1929 in concentration camps as a result of the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, nor in 1948 when Israel became a state, nor in 1967 during the Six-Day War, nor in 1974 during the Yom Kippurim War, and most especially they did not begin killing Jews in 2014. They did not begin killing Christians in 2001. This had nothing to do with American foreign policy or the oil business or the existence of a state of Israel. Muslims did not begin killing Jews and Christians over oppression or exile. They began persecuting and killing their Christian and Jewish neighbors because their religion told them to do so 1,400 years ago.
More to that, they are the enemies of every human being on the planet who's not a Muslim. That's 80% of humanity. They didn't stop with the Jews and the Christians. They continued with the Buddhists, with the Hindus, with the Zoroastrians, with the pagans. 250 million people perished by the sword of Islam.
In the first 100 years of Islam's existence.
Absolutely. I didn't want to add to it.
Yeah, actually, by the way, IQ, you're being too kind. It's not just 80% of humankind. Muslims kill their own. They're more likely to kill Muslims than they are non-Muslims. So Islam is really the enemy of 100% of humanity, not just 80% of humanity. We'll be back with IQ Al-Rasuli after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're having a conversation with IQ Al-Rasuli, the foremost expert on Islam anywhere in the world. IQ, the reason we're having this, asking you to respond to this article is because, as you know, several weeks ago, Hamas operatives kidnapped and murdered three Jews. And the world will say, well, you know, some Israeli extremists kidnapped and murdered a Muslim boy, so it's tit for tat. These incidents are not comparable. They're not even remotely comparable from my perspective, but I would appreciate your perspective on that. And then I would also like your perspective on Israel bombing Hamas sites and Hamas firing rockets into Israel. I don't see those incidences as being comparable either, but I'd like your view.
Okay. You cannot, no one who is decent should equate what Israelis did with what Hamas does or what the Muslims do. The most important thing that I want people to understand is this. It is the Muslims who provoke bestialities in their victims. Never in the history of Israel in 65 years did a single Jew kidnap and burn alive a Muslim. But they did it this time. Those people were provoked. I'm not condoning what they had done. They should not have taken the law into their hand. And they were captured. They have been captured now. And they will face the music of law.
Yes.
But who provoked it? The Muslims. Now, they claim that they are victims. Islam was never a victim. Muslims have never been victims in the last 1400 years. Muslims have always been the victimizers. We talk Hamas. You have the American representative equating Israel with Hamas. I mean, from my perspective, I would have crucified him. I'm talking about in a debate.
Yeah.
How is it possible to compare Israel with Hamas? Hamas shoots rockets, have their arsenals in residential areas, in hospitals, under the hospitals, under homes, in schools, in mosques.
Yeah.
They shoot knowing full well that Israel will have to retaliate. This is remarkable, this attack, this last 3-4 days now. Israel has targeted 1,000 targets in Gaza. They were so precise, although Gaza is one of the most densely occupied parts on the earth. 1,000 precision attacks, only 80 people are dead. And these are dead because Hamas put them in the line of fire. What do the Israelis do? They're so bloody good now. They actually call them.
Yeah,
they
right.
call the home they're going to destroy.
They
know exactly what the telephone
right.
line is.
Right. And then the Muslims will... And the right. And the right. Muslims will stay there just to become martyrs.
Yes. Well, good luck for them. You know, this is... No, Yada, there is something very interesting here.
Yes.
All the Muslims tell us that they love death while we non-Muslims love life.
Right, yes.
And yet when we oblige them
right.
by killing them in self-defense, right. they go crazy.
Yeah.
Why do they go crazy and demonstrate? Why are they angry when we are sending them to the 72 virgins that they wanted?
Well, because Allah doesn't exist, the 72 virgins don't exist, the Quran is an absolute lie. There's one aspect of the murders of the three, kidnap and murder of the three Jewish boys that is remarkably different than the kidnap and murder of the Muslim boy that you did not mention. And that is that the Israel... as a nation, religiously and politically, judiciously, was completely opposed to what the murderers did. They did not sanction it. They did not glorify it. And as a matter of fact, they opposed it. They captured them, and they're prosecuting them. And as it relates to the Hamas operatives, they were encouraged to do it. Their religion encouraged them. Their political governance encouraged them. They were presented as heroes of Islam. And there is a complete attempt by Hamas to hide the perpetrators from justice. So once you have an institutionalized, religiously and politically, killing machine that glorifies killing on one side, and a government and religion that is wholly opposed to killing, and is horrified by what happened, and is going to hold those who perpetrated the crime accountable. They're night and day different. Well, we'll continue with IQ Al Rasulik and to continue to share insights into the difference between Hamas and Israel as this fight wages on. And it is not a tit for tat. It is not a battle where both sides are committing crimes against one another. There is an aggressor. There is a victim. One is defending themselves. Welcome back to Shattering This. Hamas, the terror group that murdered tens of thousands of Jews, is not a Palestinian nationalist organization. Its charter begins with Allah, and it ends with Allah. Its charter states that the group extends to wherever on earth there are Muslims. Its goal is to create an Islamic state, period. Israel is just the first step toward world conquest. Article 7 of the Hamas Charter concludes with the famous Islamic Hadith citation, which proclaims that in the last days, Muslims will fight Jews and will kill them, and the Jews will hide behind rocks and trees, which will cry out, O Muslim, there is a Jew hiding behind me. Come on and kill him. How can you make peace? How can you reason with such people?
You can't. The tragedy in the West, in America and in Europe, they honestly believe it's only between Israel and the Arabs and the Muslims. It isn't. Islam is against every human being who's not a Muslim. You told me a few minutes ago, you said Muslims are against 100% of humanity.
Yeah.
Well, to tell you the truth, I don't consider the male Muhammadan Muslim as a human being.
Yeah, I know
it sounds outrageous, but let me elaborate.
No. Yeah.
They are degenerate human mutants, which means they look like human beings, walk like human beings, talk like human beings, but they don't have two brain cells of logic.
Oh no, they don't talk like a human being. Have you ever listened to a fundamentalist Muslim talk? They don't talk like any human being I've ever met.
Well, okay, but they talk.
They're poisoned. They're every word is enraged. They're vicious. Everything they say is a lie. They're uncivilized. To listen to, I agree that the average Muslim, other than being a little scruffy and dirty, typically, looks like any other person. But the women don't, of course, because the women walk around in tents. But the men do until they open their mouths. And once they open their mouths, the gig is over, isn't it?
Okay. So you agree with me they can't possibly have two brain cells of logic. Because if any human being had two brain cells of logic, they wouldn't be a Muslim.
Yeah, I was just telling you you were being too generous.
Oh, okay, that's very kind of you.
No, I thought I was going overboard.
No, I thought I was going overboard.
No. I was trying to tell you that you were being too kind. There reaches a point. For example, when a rat gets the bubonic plague, you might have, and there's a lot of people that do, you know, that like rats as pets. And they have rats and mice and terrariums or, you know, some kind of a little habitat. And they like rats and mice. But when the rat gets bubonic plague, it's like the man who is infected by Islam. At that point, any contact with them is dangerous and deadly. So long as you allow them to live, to exist, you subject everyone to a deadly plague.
Yes, we can't disagree, you and I. Yeah. Really, we can't disagree because we are reading exactly the same scripture.
Yeah.
That's why.
You know, when I quoted that, the hadith, the famous one, there's a Jew hiding behind him, come on Muslim and kill him. Muhammad was not promoting mass murder of Jews at the time because there were settlements in the West Bank, was he? You know, at the time, the Romans had exiled Jews from Israel. So there were no Jews even in Israel at the time. And the Muslims at that point had subjugated, robbed, raped, enslaved, and murdered the entire Jewish population of Arabia.
Correct.
There, Jews were absolutely no threat whatsoever to Muslims. And every Jew that existed within camel ride of a Muslim at the time Muhammad made that statement was either dead or enslaved.
Again,
the idea of a Jewish army was as ridiculous at the time as traveling to the moon. The hatred that leaks out of Muhammad's words, as they are found in the Quran and Hadith, has absolutely nothing to do with Israel and everything to do with Islam. And until the world starts to realize that, all of its rhetoric about what's happening today in Israel between the Israeli defense forces and Hamas is just blabber.
You know, we were talking about plague. Churchill, in his book, The River War, he said how dreadful are the curses which Mohammedanism lays on its votaries. Besides the fanatical frenzy, which is as dangerous in a man as hydrophobia in a dog. Beautifully put.
Yes.
That was in 1899 he wrote it.
Yeah. Churchill understood the menace of Islam far better than any politician that I have ever encountered.
Yes.
This article goes on to say, it says, the insistence on a foreign policy explanation for Muslim, and I know you don't like this word, anti-Semitism, for good reason, but that's what the article says. Anti-Semitism, anti-Jewishness, is incongruous with history, just as would be claiming that Hitler only hated Jews because of the Yom Kippurim War. Islam has been hating, raping, enslaving, robbing, and murdering Jews for 6 years shy of 1,400 years. When this all began in 620 CE in Medina, yesterday's Yathrib, Israel didn't even exist. It had been destroyed by Hadrian in 135 CE. And while Rome itself had been sacked by this time, it would be another 1,328 years before Israel would be rebuilt. Islamic rage has absolutely nothing to do with Israel and everything to do with Muhammad, Allah, the Quran, Sunnah, and resulting Sharia.
It's ironic. The Muslims claim Jerusalem because they say that Muhammad flew from Mecca to Jerusalem in the year 622 AD to pray at the Temple of Solomon at the head of all the previous prophets without realizing that there was no Temple of Solomon in the year 622 AD because it had been destroyed 570 years earlier by the Romans.
Yeah,
so Muhammad lied.
Vespasian's, the first Roman Jewish revolt in 70 CE, it was destroyed. And you would think if you got that tidbit of imagination and history wrong, that people from this point on would say, you know, maybe we ought not trust him on anything else. I mean, the nature of the Quran is that every statement that it makes historically is errant. Every statement it makes scientifically is errant. Every statement that it makes about the nature of God is wrong. You know, it's just, it is a childish rant in the beginning, which turns into nothing but genocidal rage in the end.
Absolutely right. Even the creation of man in the Quran is made in five different ways. From mud, from dust, from water, from sperm, from, you know, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, coagulated the blood. Yeah, coagulated blood, a scab, is the first explanation. He contradicts himself five different times on the creation of man. And the creation account, by the way, is not at the beginning of the Quran. It's interdispersed all the way through it.
Yes.
Yeah, the whole thing.
There is no beginning in the Quran, no middle in the Quran, and no ending in the Quran. Neither
and there's nothing
there in any of the chapters.
And there's no truth in the Quran.
Correct.
Yeah, what's so amazing to me is, you know, you see the Islamic State in Syria today and in Iraq, and you see all these Muslims lining up to kill on behalf of Allah and the poverty and anguish they're bringing on other people and their devotion to this religion. When you recognize that it is so pathetically stupid, I mean, if you just step back for one nanosecond and read the Quran with an open mind, you immediately come to the conclusion that this is utter nonsense. This is uncivilized. This is grotesquely immoral. This is contradictory. It's untrue historically, untrue scientifically. It's a jumbled mess. It is the worst book ever written. You'd have to be an absolute moron to be a Muslim.
But you are agreeing with me that no believing Muslim could possibly have two brain cells of logic. It is impossible.
Yeah, it's impossible. Yeah. It is. The thing that bothers me, of course, about it is that the world is trying to find a political solution to what is an entirely religious problem. And,
yeah, but
you know,
that's
it's,
the trouble. They're trying to find logic in something which is totally illogical. And they can't do that. It's impossible. That's why we are losing the war with Islam. We are not thinking the way they are thinking. We are thinking they should think the way we are thinking, which is wrong.
Correct. It's until you come to understand what motivates Muslims to be savages, you have no chance of solving the problem. The Hamas Charter begins with the Quran's praise for Muslims as the best people, and it damns Christians and Jews to be smitten by them in a basement. And it says that they are to be smitten because they have incurred the wrath of Allah, so that Muslims should be fully justified in killing them. Now, this is not a statement of Palestinian nationalism. It's about Islamic supremacism. And in this particular case, this is not Hamas's theory. I mean, the ninth surah of the Quran specifically tells Muslims to go off and hunt down and fight and kill non-Muslims until the whole world surrenders to Islam.
Why is it that our leaders can't figure it out? And yet it's so clear. It's not only so clear. It has been clear for 1400 years. It is recited in every single mosque in 80 different languages in 180 countries on the face of the earth. Every Friday. And yet our leaders, the elephant is filling the whole room and they say there is no elephant.
Exactly. You know, this article continues, if Israel never existed, Hamas would still exist, just as the other branches of the Muslim Brotherhood exist throughout the Middle East. Even if Zionism didn't exist, the Muslim Brotherhood would still persecute Jews under its control, just like they murder and persecute Christians in Egypt and in Syria.
Islam is against all human beings who are not Muslim. I agree with you also that each branch of Islam hates the other branch, so they are there. But they are, as you said, they are the enemies of every human being on the planet. I agree with you. But as far as I'm concerned, they can kill each other for the next 1,000 years. I don't care.
Yeah, it's
a heck we can't. They attack us who are not Muslim.
Right. Yes, and we can talk about that in the moment the Shattering Mist continues after the break. Welcome back to Shattering Mist. The news, no matter where you turn, is reporting that the Palestinian death toll nears 100 in Gaza. Of course, there's no such thing as a Palestinian. And then they go in to say that the majority of those dead are civilians. Well, they're all civilians that are dead. There's no such thing as a non-civilian in Gaza. But IQ, we left the last segment speaking about the fact that it doesn't really matter how many of them die. I wouldn't care if it was 100, if it was 1,000, if it was 1,000,000. They're savages. There is no hope for any of them. The women are the inspiration and the manufacturers of the jihadists, and the men are ruthless. The world is better off without them.
I agree with you. But let me repeat again. While Israel uses its army to defend its civilians,
yes,
the Muslims use their civilians to defend their arms.
Yeah.
Huge difference.
Oh, my goodness. It's and the very fact that they do this, the very fact that their stated goal is to obliterate Jews. I mean, the fact is that for 1,400 years, Muslims have sought to wipe the Jewish population off the face of the earth. And yet, the world wants the Jews to appease those who have sought to murder them for 1,400 years. The whole world's upside down.
Well, the whole world has been upside down for a very long time. You and I know that since 2001, since September 11th.
Is it possible, IQ, and when we both say that the world is better off without fundamentalist Muslims? I mean, if the world were to have 200 million fewer people in it tomorrow because fundamentalist Muslims evaporated, the world would be a better place. I want to ask you a question. Is it possible? Have you ever engaged in any experience in your life where you were able to reason with a fundamentalist Muslim, where you were able to get the fundamentalist Muslim to reject Islam's declaration of war on all humankind?
Not only they don't reject, because you can prove that they are wrong, they attack you physically and they try to kill you.
Right.
That's the difference. They cannot debate. Yada. It is impossible for a Muhammadan Muslim to debate either you or I or anyone who knows about Islam in a rational way. It's impossible.
But more than that, it's impossible for us to save them from Islam. Because they can't cost us what we say. So there, with the fundamentalist Muslims of the world, and what we know from voting records and polls is that somewhere between 65 and 70% of Muslims are fundamentalists. That with a fundamentalist Muslim, there's absolutely no hope. There is nothing that can be said that will make them civilized. They are a cancer. They're a plague on this planet. And there's no cure.
And if we don't eradicate them, they will eradicate us. And that's an irritation. I mean, they say it. It's public. It's public. It's not a hidden agenda.
Yeah. And by the way, both of us would eradicate them with words. We would quarantine them with our words. We would make Islam illegal in any free society and restrict the movement of Muslims outside of their countries. We would simply do what is done in any kind of a plague. We would quarantine those that are infected. So they can't harm anyone else. Whether they kill each other is none of our business. We can't resolve that. But we can keep them from killing us. And the only way to do it is to make Islam illegal and to quarantine those that it has infected beyond hope.
This is our objective, you and mine. That's the only objective we have. We don't make money out of it.
Right.
Our lives are threatened.
Right.
And there is not much joy in what we're saying and what we're doing. There's no joy.
No.
We're trying to awaken humans to the threat, the existential threat to every human being who is decent. You see, that is the worst virus that has ever infected the human species.
And if we do not succeed in getting fundamentalist Muslims quarantined and making the religion illegal outside of Islamic majority countries, what's going to happen?
We will be destroyed.
How many are going to die?
There's no doubt about this. I mean, there's nothing. There's no other alternative. It doesn't exist.
How many are going to die?
I tell you, in every language, we shall raise the Islamic flag on America, on Europe, on France, on Germany, on everywhere.
How many will die if we do not act?
Millions.
Billions. That is the answer. So if you think it is inhumane to quarantine Muslims, then
not
the consequence...
It's a humane thing to do.
The consequence of not doing so will be the murder of billions.
Correct.
So you need to really think this through. Islam is the worst plague that has ever been perpetrated and unleashed on humankind. Thank you, IQ, Arasumi.
Thank you, sir.